Okay, thank you for your patience. So now here we are, and we already covered the first question. So any questions on the first question? Make sure everybody has a seat. There's a seat over here, a couple seats in the middle. Okay, so just a reiteration regarding this first question, that if you're wondering, you know, how do you talk about the MSD and the SST, we said, you know, make sure that you go back and look at the studying with the formula sheet. So that was just a take home, that if you studied with the formula sheet, you would make sure to recall that the regression was the regression model. The residual is the error. You might add in that the MS is the mean square, so you have the mean square for regression and the mean square for error. But what's a mean square? It's just taking the sums of squares from the particular source and dividing by the appropriate degrees of freedom. So just a reminder to, you know, that it may be helpful for you to sort of study with these sheets and make your own notes, even though we're not going to allow you to bring your notes with you. You know, the fact that you've studied with it may be helpful. Okay, here's where we left off downstairs when we were trying to verbalize what we were talking about. So if we recall that when we had X coded 1 for female and 0 for male, that allowed us to say log odd. So I'm just going to use shortcut that when we're talking about odds, odds is P over Q. It's the probability of success divided by the probability of failure. So we're going to say the log odds is equal to beta naught if X is equal to 0. So that means the log odds of success among males is equal to beta naught. Whereas when we looked at the log odds when X was equal to 1, that was looking at among females, and that equaled beta naught plus beta 1. So here we were just mentioning that we could define both of these log odds, and then if we subtracted, we'd cancel out the beta naughts, and we would be left with, so if I take females minus males, the beta naughts cancel out, I'm left with a positive beta 1 on the left-hand side, and so we're looking at log odds among females minus log odds among males, but a difference between two logs is the same as the log of their ratio. So beta 1, when X, the gender was coded in this way, would be considered to be the odds ratio, the log odds ratio of success, but this is comparing females versus males, because females is coded one unit higher than males. So where we were just minutes ago, we said, what if X is equal to 1 for males, but X is equal to 2 for, no, reverse that. X equals 1 for females. So X is still equal to 1 for females, but now what is it going to be equal to? 2 for males. 2 for males. So this is our coding now. So what changes here? What changes is, let's just carry it forward. If we were talking about males, then it's not going to be beta naught. It'll be beta naught plus beta 1 times 2, because X is 2 for males, so we would say beta naught plus 2 beta 1 is the log odds of success among males. If we looked at females coded this way, X equals 1 for females, it will still be beta naught plus beta 1, so that's the log odds of success among females. And if we were to subtract these, so we'll subtract them now to get rid of the beta naughts. 2 beta 1 minus beta 1 is equal to beta 1. It's just that now the way we've subtracted, the order in which we've subtracted, is to take the log odds among males minus the log odds among females, and that now beta 1, if I wrote this out, I'd say it's the log odds of success in males minus the log odds of success in females. But the difference in the two log odds is now the log of the odds ratio. But this is comparing males versus females. The other coding was comparing females versus males. So what's changing? If you're comparing the odds of females versus the odds of males and you get beta 1, this is going to be 1 over that. So beta 1 is going to give you a log odds ratio that's the reciprocal, right? So it's a different comparison. You with me?
Yes.
Okay. So what are the responses? So we actually accepted two responses because we made a mistake in this question. So that can happen because we come up with new questions every time. Even though we beta test, sometimes they might not be 100% infallible. But if you looked back at what we had just done, is the interpretation of beta naught the same in both models? Beta naught was the log odds among males here in this coding, but beta naught, when you're coding X as 1 and 2, it is actually not interpretable, right? Because beta naught is included in the sum of both of these to make a log odds. So beta naught is not the same in these two models. So we can say beta naught is not the same. We just calculated our interpretation of beta 1, and beta 1 is the log of the odds of success in females versus males, coded the first way, and it's the log of the odds ratio of success in males versus females, coded the second way. So I would say neither of these are reflecting the same thing. Beta 0 and beta 1 would be different in both models. So A says the estimates of both the intercept and the slope would be different between the two models. I think that's true. Do you agree?
Yes.
Based on what we just said. Now the next one said the estimate of beta naught would change in the new model. The estimate of beta 1 would remain the same as in the first model. Now, I think that we just showed that they would be different. They would be different. But what's another way that covariate could have been coded? We said it could have been coded as 0 for male and 1 for female, 1 for female, 2 for male. Could have been coded as 2 for female and 1 for male, or 1 for male and 0 for female, right? All of those possibilities could take place. So what I'm going to ask you to do is look at the answer key for why we may have accepted B as well, but what we were looking for was A. We were looking for A. That once we wrote out the models, we saw that the intercepts and the slope were different in these two models. Yes? Yes.
Why would there even be a debate about B? Because if you're already establishing that this is our new coding, then you would be able to talk over it.
Right. No, I think the debate, and I'd have to go back and review this again, and I think I'd rather move on. The debate was that we had flipped, so we had X equals 1 for female and 0 for male. I think that at the time, some students may have read this and they actually articulated it as being X equals 1 for male and 2 for female. There was something that made some switch, but I think we've been able to convince ourselves that written out the way we have, the slopes and the intercepts are different. So let's move on to number 3. So number 3 says, consider now the model. And so we're always seeing the straight line relationship on the right-hand side. What we have to make note of is the relationship on the left-hand side. And it's still the same. It's still the log odds because it's looking at P over Q. So we have the log odds. as our model. And it says, if this model, which is the same as in question two, is fit using a generalized linear model, then what would be the correct choice of the family? So let's just say, how could we have gotten estimates of beta 1 and beta naught to begin with, if you use stata commands? So the stata commands, if we had just said logit, that would have given us the estimated, you know, b naught and b1, right? We would have gotten b naught and b1. If we had said logistic, what was the difference with logistic? It actually exponentiates both b naught, which will now be in odds, and e to the b1, which will be an odds ratio. So those are two special commands in stata that are reserved for logistic regression. This one is asking, if we wanted to do a GLM, and we're looking at the log odds of the probability of y equal 1, meaning success, log odds of success, GLM y x, then we know that we have to say what the family is, and we also have to say what the link is. But the family here, because this is an umbrella command, we can use this with any outcome. We have to tell stata, is the outcome continuous? Is it binary and following a binomial? We'll see, is it a Poisson distribution in the future? But for now, if this was an outcome that's dichotomous, the family has to be binomial, and so the family is telling us about, is it A, the probability distribution of the response variable? True. The probability distribution of the covariate? False. Optimizing the p-value in one's analysis? What? Optimizing the correlation between y and x? No. And the desired interpretation of the coefficients beta naught and beta 1. What would go more with response E? Link, right, link. So the link will tell us, if we say link logit, that we're going to be getting log odds ratios. So this was not correct. Okay, so we'll move on to number four. So number four, which of the following is not an assumption of the standard simple linear regression model with response variable y and predictor variable x? So as soon as we think of assumptions of a simple linear regression, we think of line, right? Line. Isn't it convenient that it represents linear regression? So the response variables are a random sample of independent values. That's true. That's independent. The response variables y for a given x are normally distributed. So if we think about looking at this straight line relationship, we're saying for a given x, we have a normal distribution. Whatever x we have, there's a normal distribution of y's about their mean on that fitted line. For each possible value of x, the expected y given x is this fit on the straight line. B naught, beta naught plus beta 1 x. That's also true. So we've seen all three of these so far. For D, for any two x1 and x2 variables, the variance of y for persons with predictor variable x1 equals the variance of y for persons with predictor variable x2. So in a simple linear regression, how many x's do we have? One. But now, what do we mean by this? Do we mean that we have two, or are we just talking about two different values of the covariate? So if we think of this as two different values of the covariate, then for persons who have covariate x1, the spread in the outcome y is the same as for a person who has one unit more in x1 or two units more or has a value, say, of x2. So this would also be true. This would also be true that we have equal variance. So this is the equal variance assumption. The spread is the same. It doesn't vary. So it's not that we have more spread in y's for certain values of x than for others. We're saying for any value of x, the spread is the same. So these are assumptions we make in using this methodology. Do we want to take a moment and say, why is that such an important assumption to have equal variance in our method? Why? Why is it important? So when we talk about this variance here, this is our residual variability. So if for a given x, it's the residual variability in y. It's what can't be predicted or explained by the straight line relationship. So when we calculate the error sums of squares, we are, for all values of x, looking at the difference between y and y hat, right? We're summing all of those up. So we're really pooling the variability across all the range of x values. If it varied, if it sort of ballooned up, funneled up, if there was more variability with certain values of x, then getting this pooled estimate of the within group, which is what now we're calling the error sums of squares, would be violated, right? That assumption of pooling like with like would no longer be made. So we've pooled things a lot under the assumption that we're appropriately combining things that are the same. Think of all the times we've pooled. We've pooled when we think we have two groups with equal variance. We've pooled when we get p bar. We've pooled when we get the within group sums of squares. We're pooling when we get the error sums of squares. We're combining like with like. So this equal variance assumption is really important because we can't assume, we have to try to visually check this assumption that we have equal variance across all ranges of x. And then the very last one was, for any two outcome variables, the variance of x for persons with a particular response y1 equals the variance of x for persons with response y2. That's looking in the wrong direction. We're not making any assumptions about the variability in the covariate. Our assumption is that the variability in the outcome y, is the same across all levels of x. So this would be false. Okay, well, speaking of equal variance, let's look at this example about an ANOVA. So in this example, questions 5 through 10, we have the Philadelphia data set that you've looked a little bit at that's looking at number of daily deaths and temperature category. So here's three categorized temperature groups, so we'll call them low, medium, and high temperature. And if we do the one-way deaths TempCat, let's talk about what we're doing here. So one-way is the special command in Stata that does a one-way ANOVA. It's followed by the outcome variable that has to be continuous. In this case, it's numbers of deaths. If I'm going into too much detail, we can stop. And you can tell me to speed ahead. Yeah. And you can modulate me however you want. Okay. So the outcome of deaths is continuous. And then with a one-way, what is that x variable always going to be? What type of variable?
Categorical.
So here's our, you know, three categories. We'll call them low, medium, and high. And then because we've said comma tab at the end, it's giving us, it's tabulating the means, the standard deviations, the number of observations in each of these. So the very first thing we'd see is that actually it looks like the mean number of deaths is actually higher on low temperature days, which might make sense, than on higher. Eyeballing the standard deviation, we'd say, let's look at the Bartlett's test and decide, right? You know, so they're not outlandishly different, but they might be somewhat different. And what do you notice about the sample sizes? That middle group is really large compared to the other two. Okay, so here we're splitting our sums of squares, total sums of squares, meaning variability in the outcome of deaths around the overall mean, into what it can be explained by the between group variability and what is explained by within groups. So just for fun, we'll go back and we'll say here, Y is number of deaths. We have the 0, 1, 2. And I already know that we have 55, 50, and then about 49. So a very crude diagram of the means would say that it looks like there's slightly higher mean in the low temperature group. And if I put in inside a dotted line for the overall mean, the between group variability is trying to look at how much variability is there between groups in the overall mean. And then what we don't see here is, because we don't have a plot of the data, is this spread that we're assuming to be equal in the three groups. So is there more variability within groups than between, or more variability between groups than within? Right? That's our question of interest. And diagrammatically, if there was more variability within groups than between, that would lead us to conclude the means are all pretty similar. If there's a lot more variability between groups than within, then we'd conclude that at least one of the means was different. Yeah? So here's where we split that total variability in deaths around the overall mean into what's between groups and what's within. We have sums of squares. We have appropriate degrees of freedom. So here the degrees of freedom were 2, because the degrees of freedom for three groups is 3 minus 1. And 362 is the combined total degrees of freedom across the three groups. So if you will, took the degrees of freedom for each of the three groups and added them together, and then n minus 1 is just the overall degrees of freedom. Mean square is taking the sums of squares divided by degrees of freedom. So we have a mean square for between, a mean square for within, and what's the F? The ratio of the mean square for between over the mean square for within. And that's given on the formula sheet, so one could look back at that. So in English, we're saying the F is showing the average variability between groups compared to within. And we're seeing a pretty high F. How high is high? How large is large? How big is big? Right? Right? And so it's big, dependent on what the degrees of freedom are. And then these degrees of freedom of 2 and 362 give us a p-value of 0.006. So we say that this is, you know, significantly different from what we would have expected tabled at those degrees of freedom. Now, you let me get away with explaining this without first checking our assumption of equal variance, right? So, and that's because Stata should have put this first. Stata should have said this is first and then this is second. But the Bartlett's test for equal variance among the three underlying populations, p-value is large, so we feel pretty comfortable that that our assumption of equal variance is valid. But this F-test is going back to testing the hypothesis that the three means are the same. Three mean numbers of death. So we'd reject this, and then we're left with that question, which of the means are different across the three groups? So our hunch is that the low group is different from the other two. That's our visual hunch. But we'll go with a more statistical hunch. So the statistical hunch is to do the Bonferroni corrections. So these are representing the results of the pairwise t-test. And remember that the first column, the first entry for any of these is looking at a difference in means. So yi minus yj in terms of bars, y bar I minus y bar j. And the second is the adjusted p-value. And how do we know which one this is? We take advantage of Stata telling us it's the row mean minus the column mean. So this is group 2, this is group sorry, 1 and 2 on the rows. This is group 0 and group 1 in the columns. So the very first one is looking at group 1 minus group 0, and on average there's 5.67 deaths less in group 1 than in group 0. P-value is adjusted. It's already inflated by multiplying by 3, the number of comparisons. So in fact, what we see is that there's no difference between group 1 and group 2. That was the middle and the high groups, group 1 and group 2. But there is a statistically significant difference in average mortality between the low and the medium and the low and the high. Yes? As evidenced by, this is medium versus low. This is high versus low. This one was high versus medium. Okay. Good. Well, then we'll look at a question after we spent all this time looking at it. So based on the results of the ANOVA in Table 1 and subsequent pairwise tests, what we just concluded was there was significant differences in average mortality between the low and both the medium and the high, but that was it. So does one of these responses say that? Average daily deaths do not significantly vary by temperature. False. Average daily deaths statistically significantly decrease with increasing temperature. So actually we saw no difference between low and medium and low, between medium and high. So this is false because we saw no difference between the medium and high group. Average daily deaths statistically significantly increased with increasing temperature. That was false. Average daily deaths statistically significantly higher on days with lowest temperatures as compared to both days with medium as well as days with high temperature. That's what we saw. This was true. And 5, average daily deaths are statistically significantly different between each pairwise comparison. And we saw that was false, because it was not different between the high and the medium group. Yes?
So, say we saw with the marketing test that the variances were actually not equal.
That's right.
We just stop the week.
Right. So, you know, the question is, what do you do? And you're doing this in the problem set. You're saying, well, let's try again. Let's take a log transform of the outcome and see if a log transform will help equalize the variance. But in the problem set, if you finished it or finishing it tonight, you're going to see that it didn't help. It didn't help. You still had the violation of equal variance. So what we'd like you to do is first say that's a caveat, that to go on and interpret these results, if Bartlett's test has a p-value less than 0.05, you may not have valid results because one of the assumptions failed. So we want you to still go through the exercise of interpreting it, but give that caveat. But then what's the last part of the problem set?
Bootstrap.
What does bootstrap assume?
Nothing.
There's no parametric assumptions. So then you'll have some bootstrap intervals that you can compare to your other confidence intervals. So if your bootstrap and your other confidence intervals from the regression seem similar, then you can feel, you know, that your results are still valid. But you can always report the bootstrap intervals. There's no assumptions. Yeah?
I just want to make sure you said it adjusted p-value. I just need to
sure.
Adjust these p-values.
Yeah, these are adjusted p-values. So remember what Bonferroni says. Bonferroni says, let's keep the overall alpha. If we want the overall alpha to be 0.05, we're going to take alpha divided by the number of comparisons. In this case, it's 3. And if we were doing the t-test by hand, we would say that we have a significant result if p-value was less than our alpha star. What Stata is doing is it's taking the p-value. So if I write p-value less than alpha star, what is alpha star? Alpha star we defined as alpha over 3. And what do we usually say alpha is? 0.05. 0.05, that's what we typically want. So if I multiplied both sides by 3, so I multiply p by 3, if I multiply alpha over 3 by 3, what happens? I'm now able to say, if Stata has multiplied the p-value already by the number of comparisons, then what do I need to compare this to? 0.05. So it's adjusted because it's inflating the p-value by the number, multiplying by the number of comparisons, so that all our I has to do is compare each of these three p-values to 0.05. Stata's trying to be kind to us, so we don't have to adjust for the number of pairwise comparisons that could be made. It depends on the example. So it's already adjusted. Okay, so we answered D as the correct answer in number 5. Okay, carrying on, number 6. In a Bonferroni corrected two-sample t-test of equal means, the best estimate of the pooled variance is what? So this might be another case where you go back, let's just go to your back of your exam, and let's just see if you see the Bonferroni test here. Let's look around. So, you know, become friends with the sheet, because here's the ANOVA. Much more than you even want is on this formula sheet, right? Too many formulas. But what are we going to look at? We have sources of variability. We have the sums of squares, degrees of freedom. You can fill in the mean square. But then you see the Bonferroni correction. And what else do you see? The Bonferroni corrected, you know, t-test. So this tells us right away, what are we using as the estimate of the pooled variance? The MSW. And why are we using the MSW? Remember that, especially in lab, we reviewed that the within-group sums of squares is really summing up the variances in each group, weighted by their degrees of freedom. It's really pooling that information from each group. Okay. I've had worse.
It's not shoes.
Yeah. I've had much worse. You know, if you're a mother, you can put up with everything. No, just kidding. Just kidding. Okay, so let's just go back. And we are able to look at number 6, where we just said the MSW was our best estimate of the pooled variance. So what's our assumption? We said our assumption was that the variance in the three underlying populations was the same. And what's our estimate? Our estimate of that common variance, our estimate of the common variance is the SSW, which is also the MSW, which is also the SSW divided by its degrees of freedom. So do you see anything that looks like this here? Yes. So the sums of squares within group divided by its degrees of freedom is the mean square for within. What's the matter with the other responses? Well, so the SSB over the degrees of freedom, that's the mean square for between groups, not within. The square root of the MSB, we don't even talk about that, right? That's the square root of the MSW. If this question had asked, what's the best estimate of the pooled standard deviation? Then the square root of the MSW would be appropriate, but it didn't ask for standard deviation, it asked for variance. And then the sample standard deviation S, that actually would have been a much larger sort estimate of variability, because the sample standard deviation is looking at taking all of those numbers of deaths for the combined low, medium, and high temperature days around their mean, whereas what are we doing when we have these three groups? We're saying that some of this variability, so this total, I've drawn this a little bit not to scale, but some of this variability that goes from high to low is because we have differences in average variability by group. So if you had just lumped these three groups together, S would have been the estimate of the standard deviation across all of the days. This is an important point, and I'm sorry I'm repeating it, but I just want to make sure everybody gets it. Whereas when we actually say some of this variability could be attributed to differences between groups, now we can see that the within-group variability, after teasing apart the differences between groups, is much smaller. So that MSW should be a smaller value than what we would get if we had taken the sample variance is SST over N minus 1, and its square root is the sample standard deviation. So I don't want to belabor this, but I do want to take us back here. What's the sample variance in this group, in this? The sample variance is the 66. This is the SST over N minus 1. This is what we would get as an estimate of variance if we ignored the relationship between deaths and mortality. Yeah? But once we tease apart the fact that some of the differences in mortality are due to group differences, then what's our MSW? It went down to 64. I know, it's not earth-shaking. It's not an earth-shaking decrease, but it's somewhat of a decrease. If there had been even more differences between groups, what would be happening? If there had been even bigger differences between groups. Okay, that's okay, we'll go on. No, if there had been bigger differences. So here's what we saw. We see 55, 50, 49. So I'm going to totally make this up, but suppose that it looks like something like this. So there's a lot of spread in terms of numbers of deaths, but there's huge differences between groups. So in that case, what would happen? The sums of squares for between groups would have increased. The sums of within groups, sums of squares within groups would have decreased. The mean square for within would have decreased, right? So we would say, we would be able to conclude that a lot more of the variability is due to the between group differences than that leftover within group variability. And then we continue doing that with regression, right? So this is, you know, this is really a linear regression with a categorical X, but we continue partitioning this variability throughout. So next one is saying, when we looked at that F, we saw it was considerably greater than 1. Showing if it was 1, it would say the mean square between groups is similar to the mean square within. The average variability between is similar to within. But based on the degrees of freedom, it was much, much bigger. So what's our conclusion? The variability in daily deaths within temperature group is large relative to the total variability. We'll just remind ourselves, the F is the MSB over the MSW. It's not looking at within versus total. The variability in average deaths between temperature groups is large relative to the variability in daily deaths within. I'm going to bet on that one. The variability in daily deaths within differs considerably between the groups. That's not told by the F test, it's told by the Bartlett's test. Bartlett's test. So this would have been a question about the Bartlett's test. D, we are comparing three groups in the ANOVA as opposed to two groups in a t-test. That has nothing to do with the f-test in this ANOVA. And E, the Bonferroni correction has not yet been applied to correct it. So the f-test is a global test, right? It's a global test. We're setting our alpha at 0.05 in that global test. We only use the Bonferroni correction for the pairwise t-tests. Okay, so now we move on to a different scenario. So in question 8, we are going to look at models A and B that show the results of different simple linear regression analyses on daily deaths on temperature. And we're going to ask, what is the assumption that's being made when we interpret the coefficients in model A? So let's find model A. Here it is. Here's model A. So model A says the average deaths expected deaths equals beta naught plus beta 1 times temp cat, where temp cat is a variable defined as 0, 1, or 2. 0, 1, or 2. So when we regress y onto x here, this model that we're looking at allows us to say, first of all, that beta naught is the expected number of deaths when beta naught, when temp cat equals 0. In English, you'd say it's the average number of deaths, average number of daily deaths on days where temperature is less than 32 degrees, less than or equal to 32 degrees. But beta 1 as a slope, right, so beta 1 now is, this is 0, 1, and 2, and we're looking at, and so maybe I should draw this in the other way because that's the way it goes. We're saying that beta 1 is for each unit increase in x, the slope is how much the average y changes with each unit increase in x. So in English, this would say that beta 1 from this model is the change in average daily deaths between each temperature category, because we've given them quantitative values of 0, 1, and 2, so between each temperature category. Now, based on the data that we just looked at, what did it look like, a linear relationship like that? No. And actually, is it 0, 1, and 2? Are those numbers, numeric values that we can measure? No, this could have been 1, 2, and 3. It could have been 2, 4, and 8. It's really just a label. So if we had coded this as 0, 1, and 2 and put it in this model, we'd have to assume that with each one category change in temperature, the change in the expected y would be the same, would be the same. And that's an assumption we typically don't want to make, which is why we set it up as an ANOVA with groups, or what might we do if we used a regression model? We might look at model B, which is the indicator or dummy variables for a three categorical variable. So should we set up the dummy variables and then go back and answer some of these questions? So I'm going to go back to model A for a moment, and the graph that we just drew, the diagram we just drew. If there had been another category 3, then what would we have expected? That the change in the average daily deaths would have gone down by the same amount, the same slope, and if there had been category 4 and 5, right? You know, that we would have had this linear relationship. That's a hard assumption. Model B says we can handle these categories because here's our original data. So temp cat, we knew, was categorized as 0, 1, or 2. And setting up indicator variables says take the number of categories you have and set up. So if you have p categories, set up p minus 1. Indicator variables. So what's p in this case? 2. So, no. P is not 2. P is 3. We have low, medium, and high temperatures. So we would set up 3 minus 1, which is 2 dummy variables. So for the moment, I'm going to call them x1 and x2, but we're going to call them temp1 and temp2 in this model. So if we looked at one way that we could categorize this, we could say that our first dummy variable equals 1 if temp cat equals 1, 0 otherwise. So it means temp cat is going to, when temp cat is 1, this first dummy variable will be equal to 1. But when it's equal to 0 or 2, it will be equal to 0. And the next syntax says the second dummy variable will be 1 if the temperature category is the highest one, 0 otherwise. So why do we do this? We do this because we don't want to assume linearity of this categorical variable. But now, if I look across, and I'm circling in red, which is the lowest temperature category? It's when both of the dummy variables equal zero, right? And if the first dummy variable is one and the second one is zero, it's reflecting the middle temperature category. Yes? And if the second one is, if the first dummy variable is zero and the second one is one, then that has to tell us it's the highest temperature category. So this is going to now allow us to, as we've seen in class, express this model using truly categorical variables, not making an assumption that there's a linear relationship, either increasing or decreasing. So should we keep going on talking about this? So you're sort of looking at me like you've never seen dummy variables before. But you can't fool me. You've seen them before. So I'm just going to add one more caveat. Did we need to set it up like this? No. We could have had something else, as the reference group here is going to be the lowest one, but it doesn't need to be that one. We could set it up differently. But let's interpret it as we've set it up. And if you want to talk about setting it up differently, we could. So if in doubt, write out the model so that we can figure out what these are. So X1 and X2 I'm referring to as temp1 and temp2. So when X1 and X2 are both equal to zero, but I can call them temp. Let's call them temp. If temp1 is equal to temp2 and they're both equal to zero, then that tells me I'm looking at the lowest, I'm going to call them low, medium, and high, the lowest temperature category. And what's my expected deaths? The expected deaths among the lowest category will be beta naught plus zero plus zero. Yes? Yeah. Beta naught plus beta one times zero plus beta two times zero. If we're looking at temperature temp1, the dummy variable equaling 1, but temp2 is equal to 0. On the second line above, that told me this was the medium category, and the expected deaths then among those on medium temperature days would be beta naught plus beta 1 times 1 plus beta 2 times 0. So this would be beta naught plus beta 1. And we have just one more. When temp 1 is 0, but the second indicator variable temp 2 is 1, that tells us we're looking at the high temperature days, and the expected number of deaths, not days, but deaths, expected deaths among high temperature days will be beta naught plus beta 1 times 0 plus beta 2 times 1. Are you all with me? Okay. So then if we're all on the same page, we're just going to interpret these, because by itself, the constant that we're estimating here of 55 should look like a familiar number, because 55.7 that we're estimating as beta naught is the expected number of deaths or average number of deaths during low temperature days. How's everybody doing? We're doing okay?
Yeah.
Okay. So let's talk about our last two. So here we have B1 and B2. So B1 is the estimate of beta 1. How do we get at that? How do we get at interpreting it? Subtract, right? So if we subtract the medium temperature expression minus the low, the beta naughts cancel out, and we would say in English that beta 1 is the difference in average mortality between the medium temperature days and the low temperature days. And so if you look back at the means, this estimate, negative 5.67, is the difference in average number of deaths between the medium and low temperature days. Yeah? What's beta 2 by itself? So we have the high is beta naught plus beta 2. The low is beta naught. If we subtract high minus low, then beta 2 is the difference that we're estimating here by -6.5 in average number of deaths between the high temperature days and the low temperature days. So that's what's given here as our estimates for beta 1, beta 2, and beta naught. And if we recall from looking at the ANOVA, what we're seeing is that actually the difference between medium and low was significant. The difference between high and low was statistically significantly different from zero. And we see these p-values, confidence intervals, are also reflecting that. So this didn't make any assumptions about linear relationship. We're modeling these categories. So we'll go back now and ask number 9. So from model A, where we had the categorical variable, we would, what's the matter? You want to do 8? Okay, we can do 8. So 8 shows the results of these different simple linear regressions, which assumption is made when we're interpreting the slope, beta 1, in model A. This was where we said we're considering these to be 3 equally spaced categories, and that we would have said the change in average daily deaths per unit category increase would be the same. So let's see if any of those sound like that. The difference in average daily deaths between any two adjacent temperature categories is the same. That's what we just said. This is true. The difference in average daily deaths between any two adjacent categories increases as X increases. What would that look like? You'd have a slope. Well, we're going from zero, sorry. You'd have a slope that goes from zero to one, but then that one, if it increased, if the slope declined even more, we'd have a change in slope. And then by 2 to 3, if we had 3, we'd have an even steeper slope. So, but this is not what we're doing. So B is false. The difference in average daily deaths between any two adjacent temperature categories decreases or increases, both of those are false. D, the difference in average temperature per unit change in daily deaths increases with increasing daily deaths. So both D and E are talking about the difference in average temperature. The temperature isn't the outcome, it's not the response, it's the covariate. So this, if we used wording like this, this would have had to have been a regression of the expected temperature onto daily deaths. So we'll rule out D and E because of that. So wording that says the change or difference in expected or average outcome per unit change in X would have had to have been a different model for D and E to be true.